Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Tech Can't Save Us. I'm Rebecca Hedman.
I'm Samia Sarna.
I'm William Gazvi P.
And I'm Paul David. This week on Tech Can't Save Us, we'll be covering immersive audio experiences and voice search for brands.
Yeah, this comes after the latest development from ChatGPT that's going to be making the chatbot a lot chattier. It's a lot of chats in a single sentence, but yeah, enjoy it. Some cool stuff going on in the world of podcasts. You're listening to one right now, Podception, and some cool developments from Meta as well.
And before we jump in, please remember to like and subscribe and share the podcast. All your support is really appreciated and help us keeping you informed and up to date on all the exciting things happening in our world of tech. The week before last, it was revealed that OpenAI were introducing two interesting updates to ChatGPT, and they've been testing the possibility of where their latest version, so version 4, could end up. And one of the most interesting developments that we've been kind of having a think about here is around how ChatGPT can now give vocal responses in real time. So not only will it be typing out its responses in the way it does, one word at a time, making it look like it's kind of sort of quote-unquote thinking, now I'll actually be able to say it out loud. And if using the word say is even correct here, I'm not 100% sure. And so yeah, let's dive into it. Do we think that generative models should be kind of talking to you as they're quote-unquote thinking? Because it feels like, you know, there's a difference between the way text and typing. That's sort of a bit of a different experience to it talking back to you. So yeah, opening the floor up to what people think of this.
Going to be some interesting social content of the biggest fails from like just chat, like ChatGPT saying horrible things.
Yeah, I'm happy to take the yes camp for this one, because this morning when my alarm was going off, I tried to tell Siri to freaking turn the alarm off and it didn't work. And if she can't do that bare minimum effort and just talk to me and accomplish tasks that I ask her to do, then what the hell are we doing here? So yeah, I mean, I think like I want that personal hands-free experience, and just, you know, I want it to make my life easier. I don't want to have to get out of bed when I don't want to get out of bed. But also, you know, you talk about folks who are a bit lonely. I've seen applications for, you know, we were talking to someone at the Sifted Summit last week who's talking about integrating AI with chatbots and integrating, you know, family memories for older folks who could use a little perking up and just a little bit of support and their memories delivered to them using an interactive AI chatbot. So I think there's like a huge social value that can be delivered, obviously, if we hopefully take care of all the privacy implication, things like that. But I think I would fall into the yes camp for this one.
Yeah, and I think when we think about how generative AI has entered public discourse, I think a lot of the time we're seeing it quite visually. And so this is quite an interesting avenue to think about it, just in terms of our different senses that we have going on as well. So audibly, what is that actually going to do for our experiences with different products as well? You know, users can choose from 5 lifelike synthetic voices. How lifelike would, you know, remain to be seen, and how kind of uncanny valley we have to go down for this to actually be comfortable. But, you know, it's going to be a really advanced model, and how it's going to be used across different sectors. So OpenAI and Notorious for being very select with who they share it with, especially their new technology. So it'd be interesting to see who they actually decide to partner up with and share it out with. But yeah, I think it's just interesting, just because, yeah, it's just a new sense that is being engaged in a different way. I think that for me is what's quite interesting about this technology.
I feel like all that happens in the world of tech is that there's a generation of techies that want to have a sci-fi experience from when they're growing up, and right at the point where they can no longer enjoy that sci-fi experience, they invent the technology. So like everyone grew up watching Knight Rider. It's a car that I talk to and then it talks back and it's smart and it's AI. And it feels like we're really close to having that as like being a mass market thing in about 4 or 5 years. And all the sort of like, and I say this as a nerd, nerds who grew up doing like Knight Rider and then went into Silicon Valley and then actually invented AI models that can do a similar sort of thing are all in their 70s now. And they're going to get like 10 years of enjoying this car that can talk to them before they're like, actually, you know, this is fucking lame. And I'm done with it.
Yeah, honestly, I think that I stand on the side of no a bit, because I think it gets a little bit creepy for me personally. Where do we draw the line with the voice recognition and with our chatbots being actually able to respond back to us? Will, you spoke about like this Knight Rider vision for the cars, which no names mentioned, but I think we've kind of got to that point where they are making those models. And I think, you have to kind of wonder, where will it take us? I know in America they're trialing at the moment delivery services that are actually like robots which kind of like drive the streets and like speak to the people that they're delivering to. They are literally the epitome of what I think all these people in Silicon Valley are aiming to try and create. And I think it's scary and dangerous because you can get to a point where you have no need for humans. And I wonder, are we trying to eradicate the actual need for people? You know, that and it might seem like a trivial thing or something that you or I may never do. We never know. But for some people, being, you know, if they are, for example, a delivery driver and they have that interaction, that's their livelihood, that's their passion, perhaps. And are we trying to get rid of that completely? Is this what the aim is? Where is this going? They're kind of the questions that come into my mind when I think about this human voice coming from chatbots or robots.
Yeah, and I think there's like a question here about the even calling it a human voice. Like, I personally still think, like, these are tools and machines that we use like day in, day out. Humanizing it too much takes away from the fact that these are tools that are under our control, that we have created. They aren't evolved. They're not part of like a natural evolution, which is a lot of the kind of vernacular that's used around a lot of these AI tools. And so by doing so, it kind of removes any agency or responsibility we have to making sure that they're the best they can be, that they are serving everyone and not just a few. And so, yeah, I always get a bit nervous as well, saying, yeah, it's the way like ChatGPT at the moment like kind of stagnates its text, and so it doesn't give you the block of text all in one go. It types it out kind of like one word at a time, and that idea that it's responding to you and it can say, it can be polite or it could be rude and all these kind of things, I struggle trying to put those two things in my mind of like, oh, it's trying to be more human, but why?
I'm gonna take this opportunity to bring in a Star Trek reference as usual, and I think, yeah, you bring up a particular, like, you know, ethical thread in this whole conversation around, like, Star Trek Next Generation. Like, what does sentience mean? What does human mean? So, like, there's the classic example of Data, the android, and, you know, there's a few episodes where they give him, like, an emotion chip, and he's allowed to have human emotions, and obviously he can speak and converse and stuff like that. But I think that series deals with it really well in terms of, like, walking through the ethical implications of giving, in this case he's an android, but giving a machine human like qualities, be it a voice, be it the appearance of emotions, if we can even call it emotions, to your point, Sabina. And I think we're going to move even further into that territory of, okay, like, where do we draw the line and why? Because, like, on some level, to Rebecca's point, we want to draw the lines to preserve space and agency and opportunity for humans, but also at the same time, you know, we want things taken care of, we want conveniences, opportunities to do other things, like relate to each other in other ways. And so you could look at the other way and say, maybe there's an opportunity to, I don't have to relate to that driver as like just a driver who like serves me. Maybe I can now, maybe that levels the playing field because it's an automated vehicle and there's another way that I can relate to that person. So I think there's like a couple interesting ways to think about it. And I don't think we should just ask, okay, is it going to eliminate human interaction? I think we're in a particular moment where it does, and we haven't figured out the next phase where we can embrace those opportunities where it opens. But I think we should leave space for that. Like, leave space for it could create new and interesting ways for us to interact with each other if some of these menial tasks are actually taken up by AI.
Two specific cases where I think actually the tech is quite cool in how it's being used. One, I think making everything more accessible for visually impaired folk and to be able to have an audio, that's objectively a good thing. Like, to, you know, to be able to have a very sophisticated search system. To Paul's point earlier, how shit is it if you're blind and your main way of searching the internet is Alexa? Alexa is so bloody bad at what it does versus having a truly responsive chat model. I think that is like very cool and, you know, definitely a win for voice AI. The other one that I think has been announced recently was by Spotify, which is that they're going to be launching an AI that can translate podcasts and audio content in real time in the original speaker's voice. And I think, to your point, Savina, around like training a model and what is it, a real voice, I think that's just objectively very cool because you as the host are saying, I give you permission to translate my voice into Spanish to make this podcast and this content available in Spain. I think that's just very cool. And again, the part stuff of sci-fi that actually used to get you really excited, like that's the instant translation chip that you would like see in every Doctor Who episode or whatever, that suddenly all these aliens can now speak it like and converse with you. The fact that we're kind of skirting the edge of that technology, I think that actually opens up far more doors than it closes in terms of human-to-human interaction. Obviously, Spotify are the ones that have got a lot of press for it. But imagine being able to have a Zoom call with anyone in the world in any language and just they're chatting in Spanish, you're chatting in English, and it's like you're both talking in your native tongue. That's really, really cool. Genuinely opens the world in a way that hasn't really been seen since the advent of like the train station or something. So there are positives along with all the usual fears about data training and AI and big tech and evil.
I think, Will, that would be very cool. But then I can't help but go on the other side and think that host of the podcast that says, yes, take my voice and translate this into another language. What about the people out there who have their voices online and may find their voices being used or manipulated in negative ways? And I think that that's where you have to kind of side eye this privacy and these kind of grey areas behind how ChatGPT and other chatbots or softwares are using your voice. Because if you can't actually fully control, you know, and say, yes, I consent to this or I don't consent to that, you never know. Like you could have your voice be used on anything, anywhere in the world, and you wouldn't even realize. And I see here we've got the point about how Facebook used our photos to train for facial recognition for years. And I mean, God knows what our voices from Tech Can't Save Us are out there doing in the world right now. So I don't know. It's a bit of a sketchy one.
Yeah, the scary side of the tech that I just spoke about is that you're probably in about 5 years' time going to have a place where you could take a 30-second clip of my voice and a photo of me and create a video of me doing and saying anything. And that's not good. Frightening.
There was a recent case of I think Tom Hanks was featured in a dental ad that had nothing to do with him, and it's an ad that he appears to have fronted, but it was actually an AI fake, you know. And it's happened to other celebs and people like Martin Lewis, the financial expert. And obviously there's a big push to like toughen the law in England or Wales to make it easier to prosecute, you know, offenders for stuff like this as it specifically relates to pornography and things like that. But it's scary to see it. And now, you know, Google, in the context of political campaigns, you know, they've announced that political adverts that run on its platform have to disclose whether they've been created with AI. So this is very like in the now, very topical, very salient. And like the regulation is trying to catch up with, you know, the technology. As again, back to regulation, need the regulation.
Pew, 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 it's the regulation horn.
Yeah. But yeah, I worry about being, you know, one of like the people who's like, oh, the internet will never be a thing. Like, I worry about being on record and just saying like, hey, this is, but also like, I think there is cause for legitimate concern in terms of how it's going to affect people's jobs, how it's going to affect people's privacy, how it's going to affect their well-being. Like, if we're already worried about people not really having the right to be forgotten, for example, on the internet, this is going to damage that, you know, like multifold because of just the proliferation of their image, their voice and everything else because of AI fakes and duplicates. So it's, maybe we should be more concerned than some of these past sort of innovations, but also there's huge opportunity here. So it's a tough one.
To maybe give a very specific example of actually where that's happened and how scary some of this is. I think it was in Italy, but in like a regional town in Italy, is one of those places where the population is like 20,000. So you literally know everyone knows each other. A group of 14-year-old boys took photos of all of their local schoolgirls and using AI managed to take off their bikinis so that they were essentially naked and then posted those on the school board for everyone to see. And like, if you were to look at it, you would think this is just a photo of this girl that lives down my street naked. And that's a 14-year-old using something like DALL-E or Midjourney or whatever. So, you know, if that 14-year-old then has access to a voice recording and video and stuff, you know, like they it really is scary, some of the stuff that can do. So yeah, to Paul's point about regulation and sort of real attention to how sketchy and horrible this could be for a very specific use case like that, there's a lot that needs to be done in terms of regulating the tech by the tech, like not, you know, government slow moving, but if you are the folk on who have Midjourney, you should not be able to use that as your tool. Like, you know, that should be built into the software, that you can't be using it to take clothes off of people. Like, that would seem like a no-brainer.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good place to pivot and bring in some data here. So we're seeing the more pedestrian, more quotidian uses of voice search in everyday life. Right now, more than 1 in 4 people regularly use voice search on their mobile devices. ChatGPT, in many ways, is a bit of a reversal of roles in the sense that we've, you know, seen the trend of us talking to the tech rather than the tech talking to us, and now we're seeing it sort of shift. By 2024, experts estimate that the number of digital voice assistants, think Alexa, Siri, Microsoft's Cortana — you don't hear about Cortana very much — will reach 8.4 billion, which is massive. And Forbes is reporting that 90% of consumers believe that voice search is faster and more convenient than text search. I've really tried not to get out of bed this morning for an extra half hour, but Siri wouldn't let me. So her Siri restricted. I don't know. Siri was in charge in that moment. That's all I know. Which sort of leads to the question, should we be polite to our voice search assistants and to Savina's earlier point, like treat them as if, because they have, you know, human sounding voices, treat them as if they're humans and we should be kind to them.
I think the arena I've seen this conversation play out a lot is with children. So families, you know, having Amazon Alexas or Google Home devices in their family home, and kids being kids will ask 1 million questions a day. I think there's even an advert for Alexa, one of the home devices, which shows that how they can be like part of the home kind of setup and help answer your kids' homework when you're not sure you have the answer yourself. So that's a big part of their branding and marketing anyway. And so, you know, Amazon kind of tapped into this and started to have a think about how they could embed themselves into the home even more. So in 2018, they introduced a feature called Magic Word, which would encourage children to speak to Alexa using polite words, so saying please and thank you. And if they did this, it would kind of offer niceties in return. And Google announced a really similar thing called Pretty Please Mode as well. Both features were dropped not long after. And if I'm being honest, I'm not surprised, because we've mentioned quite a few like sci-fi references here, and you're very much going down a route here where you're, one, again, thinking of the robot, the machine, as like a human entity that, you know, deserves the same level of empathy and like kind of respect that a human does. But also on the flip side, what happens if you're not polite to your machine? What is it going to do to you? How is it going to respond? And embedding that into a child, they're kind of forming their understanding of the world. And so saying that you have to say please and thank you to a non-human entity could be quite confusing. So yeah, I'm on the side of you don't need to say please and thank you to your search tools at all. No, it's fine.
What if we are heading towards full sentience?
No, we're not.
Would it not be good to train the next generation on...
We should train the next generation of believing that they won't become sentient, and that we can still control our robots and our AI because we can. I don't believe it. There's going to be full sentience. I think that's a myth.
Hard prediction there from Tech Can't Save Us. General AI will not be a thing that comes around.
Okay, so maybe it can't be Tech Can't Save Us. From Savina Serrana, don't worry. No, you guys.
We're backing you. Fuck that. To be honest, the day that general AI becomes a thing, we've probably got bigger things to worry about than whether what Savina said on a podcast.
What are the PR implications of this?
Guys, I refer you to your October edition of Tech Can't Save Us, where you foolishly predicted this wouldn't occur.
It's going to be like Batman Rises, where like they're in the court of like the people, and there's going to be like a judge with a hackle, and then yeah, we're going to be made to go forced talk on big ice. So sorry, guys. Sorry, but
yeah,
not...
Will we get targeted first? I think we might get targeted first by the general AI, by Skynet, because we'll be on record.
Worth it.
Yeah, ironically, tech will then, not only not save us, it will actively be harming us, so...
I think I disagree. I think we should be being polite to our devices, and actually, when I think about how I interact with Siri, which I'm always interacting with Siri, asking Siri to do this and that for me, I naturally will ask with a please. So for me, it's just ingrained. I'm not overthinking it. And I think for a lot of children, I know, like for my child, I put such a value on manners, and people always say like, oh, so polite. And I think it becomes an innate thing, a natural thing. And I think those of us who do naturally have good manners will just naturally use please and thank you with our chatbots. Although, I correct me if I'm wrong, when I have used Bard and used the word please, I think it doesn't respond or recognize. I could be wrong. Somebody give me a rebuttal on that one.
does work. But that was a lot of shade to throw at Savina about people who have natural manners will say please and thank you to their chatbots. You know, it's like, I mean,
a little bit of spice.
It's okay. I also don't use a lot of voice activated stuff because I'm paranoid about it.
But when I do, I start with a fuck you, Siri. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually call it Cortina. Like, I just call it the wrong name.
And it's still
you gaslight it.
Yeah. I'm like, you're no better than the Microsoft paperclip. Get over yourself. You're fine.
Wow.
This is why the AI wants to overthrow us.
Bringing the paperclip into it. What did the paperclip ever do to you except help you find
files? And never leave your corner of your Windows, ever.
Explain PDFs.
A lot of people are going to know what the hell we're talking about in terms of that paperclip, by the way. All of our Gen Z listeners. So we're gonna have to explain that. There's an opportunity for a social creative there in terms of the brief history of AI assistants and stuff like that. Mr. Clippy, yeah.
Gen Zers don't listen to this podcast. It's not.
I know what I was thinking.
If it was hosted on TikTok, we'd get more traction.
I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah, I would back Rebecca on this one. I think it doesn't hurt to be polite. It doesn't hurt anyone. If anything, it teaches kids like to be polite across the board and stuff like that. I'm shocked for one to hear a British person openly advocate not being polite and having manners. I'll just say that right now. And also, like, I'm open to the idea. This is going to be a bit far afield that like. You know, we have invented a new form of life that is our companions and things like that. And we're going to have to, like, get used to that to some extent. I think there's a real possibility there that, like, I don't think we've invented, like, our AI overlords or, general AI or anything like that. But this is an entity that exists. It's a digital entity and stuff like that. And I think there's something to be said for, treating it as we would a companion that helps us do lots of things. I mean, I feel like some of our voice search assistants and AI tools, frankly, do more for me than like some people in my life I can think about. You know what I mean? If I'm really, really honest, like they're more helpful and informative and they're just
right
there.
Here.
Yeah, no, no.
There's a lot of spice going on in this podcast today.
I don't know names. I don't know names, but.
Texting me under the table.
But yeah, I mean, I think, look, I know that sounds like a stretch. I know this podcast is called Tech Can't Save Us. And I don't think AI or voice search tools are going to save us by any means, but they do a lot for us and their roles are going to grow in our lives. So why not be polite to them? Why not practice that as, and think about it, like in that way, could our voice search tools, our AI tools help us be more human? You know, we're already talking about AI tools that are helping people with coaching and mental health support and, combating the epidemic of loneliness and stuff like that. So I guess I would question, like, what is the function? What is the value of being impolite to them? And if nothing else, if they can't remind us of our own humanity, then sort of, I'm just kind of like, why not?
Yeah, I think as well, like, general artificial intelligence might happen in our lifetime, but quite late on. Whereas I do think more and more, even if what you're talking to isn't sentient online, there will be more and more of those experiences, like where you're dealing with an incredibly realistic replication of a human person, and so better to be polite and courteous to it. All I'll say is, like, all the people I know who are angry gamers and scream fuck you at people, real human beings down a headset, tend to also be quite angry in real life. And maybe if they'd had some practice with a voice AI assistant when they were kids, they could have chilled out a little. That's my two cents, my hot take.
That's quite the hot. That's a Black Mirror episode. I can see like a whole narrative being spun out about that. Yeah, look, I'm not advocating for like swearing at your voice assistants. I don't think anyone should be swearing at anyone. I guess I just am concerned about blurring that line between like machine and human and like making sure we still value empathy and like human to human contact as well. Because when it comes to these machines, which are machines, they are built for certain people as well, and certain people are excluded from who gets to use it, like whose voice is actually going to be listened to. Like all of us on here have Western accents, and so we don't really have to consider the way that different accents from around the world might not be considered or compatible with certain AI tools as well. Even children as well, and people with disabilities, sometimes their words aren't picked up in the same way, and so, or like patterns of speech, or if you've got impairments as well. So I think it's got a long way to go for like considering if we want to make it general use for around the world. I think at the moment it really suits a Western audience. And so, yeah, I think, and even then, like able-bodied people and also people who don't have, are probably like older in their life as well. So I think there's, questions to be have about who it's serving as well.
I'll tell you what, I lose sleep over the fact that AI can't pick up when a Scottish person says purple burglar alarm. Like that really upsets me just in terms of an equity standpoint. I really think you need to get in there and modify modify that tool so that, you know, Scottish people can say purple burglar alarm, and that
this is your Roman Empire.
I'm just saying. I think like it's already happening, right? Like my eyes were messed up, you know, 10 years ago. And so I got under a machine and lasers, like, you know, sliced a bit of my cornea, and then a doctor slipped it over and fixed it. And then I had perfect eyesight, right? My aunt lives on a pacemaker, for example, right? And like, you know, we're talking about like, we're already modified beings. We, many of us have like, you know, different, whether we've been modified by a machine externally or there's a machine inside of us that's like helping us live, you know, longer, healthier, to hopefully better lives. And that's not setting aside all the sort of, you know, horrible implications of how machines are murdering us, and you know, we're seeing that all over the world right now. But like, I think we've already started to blend that in terms of like how digitally and sort of technologically infused we are as our own beings. Contact lenses, like insert any other, you know, innovation, things like that. So like, I think we have to be careful, but we also shouldn't be so circumspect that we like fool ourselves to believe that it's like we're already not on that road already, I think. And then how do we like have a more fluid and kind of open, evolving conversation about it, and not sort of like a, just like a kibosh on everything, but also like being really clear about like, why are we so rigidly defining the difference between the two? And like, what are we defining the difference between the two? I think is a really important question to ask.
To that point, maybe running the conversation off, any sort of predictions for what the future of voice entails, maybe like what we hope the future of voice is in tech, and then maybe what we think the future will be. Rebecca, what's your hot take for 2024 in voice?
I really hope that Gen AI actually begins to recognize tone of voice, because I think that that's a really interesting way that we as humans interact and like can actually change the meaning of what we are trying to say. So I would like to see these tools evolve, and you know, they are obviously constantly learning and evolving. So I'd like to see them maybe recognize tone of voice, perhaps. You know, there's a difference in the way that things are said, how you say them, how things are said, I should say, really. So that's my hot take for 2024. Will this new feature from Meta in the Ray-Ban glasses recognize when you are saying stream live, please, versus stream live, please, and then sort of deny your request? I don't know. We'll see.
Savina, what's your hot take?
I love seeing like smaller communities build up their own versions of voice AI, and like using voice tools. Like there are Wired ages ago did like a 4-part series of like AI colonialism, and like the first 3 parts were like uncovering it, and the 4th part was looking at potential futures. I think it's Karen Ho who wrote it. And the 4th part was looking at Indigenous communities in Australia who were using like and building their own AI voice tool, which was able to preserve a language which is essentially dying out. And they used it by building their own data set and like kind of, you know, using open source tools. And that for me is way more exciting than like general purpose anything, because I don't think as a species we can do anything that's general enough for all of us. And so I would love to see more localized uses of voice AI technology.
Paul, what's your hot take?
Yeah, I don't know how hot of a take it is, but I'm most interested in it, you know, as a former educator in the education context. Again, with another Star Trek reference, you get 2 for this episode. How lucky are you? Think about like the Vulcan Academy, you know, and just the idea of like you can create this pod for a child to learn in between their interactions with other humans. You know, they're not in the pod all day, so everyone calm down. But like, imagine a pod that's like specifically attuned to a child's learning style or any specific, you know, learning variation that they have. Imagine it can switch between voice and maybe images for a child that's autistic and thinks in more in images, you know, in terms of the way they interact with the world, for example. I think there's huge implications for that, you know, and taking it from the world where we are now, kids were thrown into this like digital ecosystem of learning during the pandemic. And by many accounts, it was awful experience because educators weren't trained and they were on Zoom and, they weren't integrating tools like this to a space where you can have a tool that's specifically attuned to that child's voice or the way they think and the way that they learn best. I think is I'm hugely bullish on the applications for that. And also the opportunity to like build deeper empathy for humans, like showing them the experience of someone around the world who grew up in a refugee camp, or, you know, someone who, you know, just is a different race than them, and what they experience and things like that, I think are massive. And I don't think we've even begun to scratch the surface on like what those tools could do. And that's, you know, a little bit broader than voice, research, but I think just go back and watch some of those Star Trek, you know, movies and shows and watch how the Vulcans are interacting with the tool and asking questions and being prompted in different ways. I think it's very exciting.
We should have a klaxon on this podcast for regulation and Star Trek. Those and they should be different.
Will, what's your hot take?
So mine is unfortunately much, much less inspiring. ChatGPT has almost certainly done its audio language model to replace Alexa. And I think what you'll start to see is the specific partners that it rolls it out to are like Amazon, all of the voice assistants, so that you can have a far better, more conversational chat with your voice assistant, but which will almost certainly be tied to some form of buying activity. I think unified voice is what we're aiming towards, which is like your voice assistant is synced up with your Amazon, your phone, your everything, and you can say, oh, I'm thinking of getting a present for my grandma. What should I do? And ChatGPT's model can have a conversation with you back and forth that's tied to Amazon's catalog of products. And you can be like, oh, that sounds interesting. Send me a photo of it on your phone. And that'll happen. And I think towards the end of next year or the year after, that's when we're going to see that. So rampant consumerism. That's what my hot take is.
So our overlords aren't going to be like really evil and try and kill us. They're just going to want us to buy more things. Like that's going to be like how it gets. It's going to get to you, Will. It's going to happen.
That's always the real evil plan. Like it's like, oh, Facebook's doing all this stuff that day. It's like, no, Facebook just wants to sell you shit you don't need off Wish. Then also creates a situation where people can fucking interfere with elections and spread disinformation. But it doesn't care about that. Its primary goal is selling you shit on Wish. And that's what's sad, is most people aren't evil. They're just incredibly fucking greedy.
Got our social clip for the week. Thank you.
That actually takes us nicely into the last point for today's episode. Paul, you kind of touched on this with your hot take about voice recognition technology being incorporated into different products. You spoke on education, and I would just want to pose the question to the group: will we see other brands incorporating this technology into their products, and will it be successful? I know that Meta debuted its own new chatbot called Meta AI, and it's actually related to virtual reality, mixed reality, and generative AI, and they have got a product at the moment in collaboration with Ray-Ban. So we're already seeing a new type of product kind of incorporating this voice recognition technology. What are our thoughts about other brands doing the same thing?
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard to compete with like the consumer demand that we're seeing in terms of, you know, I think we mentioned before that like close to 100%, 90% of consumers think that it's faster, more convenient for voice search compared to text search. I think you're already seeing text being integrated into everything from like fitness wearables to how you buy products on your phone and things like that. So I think like to that point, like, yes, our overlords aren't necessarily going to try and kill us. They will try to sell us stuff. But that is coming from our own desires for, you know, again, not getting up and going across the room to play a specific song or to order milk or something like that. So like sometimes we are a little bit blameful of like the suppliers, but we also need to take a look in the mirror and look at ourselves and like our own desire for convenience and ease and speed. And we can't always blame it on the big bad tech company that sort of, you know, is producing products that we're eating up. I think there's, you know, that classic phrase in tech of like garbage in, garbage out. If we're, you know, the demand we're pushing towards them is like, and I understand the idea of like manufactured consent. I've read Chomsky. I get all that shit. Like, don't worry. But also we need to be thinking about the demand we're putting in the market. And like, we had a fantastic conversation today with the folks over at Elizabeth Smile, who are leading a wave of sort of grief tech and producing tools for folks to be able to connect with memories, you know, of their loved ones who have passed, and to find support networks if a child, for example, loses a loved one, for example. And so I think they're tapping into a demand that they see from people to use tech for more positive ways of working through grief and working through issues. And I think that's a great example of like, you know, there's human demand for tools like that. And if we could push investment that way and push the emphasis towards tools like that and away from, okay, I don't need 36 different types of deodorant to be ordered from my voice search tool, then great. But that at the end of the day, like, that's got to come from people. Like, tech isn't just like built in a vacuum. It comes from some level of demand from people for different things. So yeah, I'm a bit like kind of on the fence about, you know, where it's headed. And I think mostly positive, but we also, you know, there's something to be said for us taking a little bit of accountability as well, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to end. We've covered the changing goalposts of voice search, AI, some of the cool / scary / exciting, God, who are we? It's 2023, it's nearly 2024. Are we having fun? Of tech and voice tech.
Yeah, and I'm excited for our next episode, which is going to talk about smelly tech and the use of our noses and tech, which maybe that'll be the future. Maybe that was a hot take we didn't include in it. But I'm thinking multi-sensors, guys. We could do a whole series on this. It'll be great.
Did you ever watch Futurama?
Yes.
Smell-o-vision. Oh, yeah. It's happening.
It's happening.
It's really happening.
We said it here first, guys. Hot takes. There we go. And because we give you such good hot takes like this, please make sure that you head over to our website. We can find out even more great information in our monthly newsletter. And you can also tell us if you do think smell-o-vision is the future or not in our survey linked in the episode description below.
Cool. Yeah, we'll gather your friends around for next week's episode about smell-o-vision and smelly tech. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, please do share this episode with your network. If you're listening on Spotify, give us a rating, hit that subscribe button to never miss an episode, and be on the lookout for some great video content coming your way. We're going to start sharing a lot more high quality video content. So we're very excited about that. And yeah, stay tuned. Bye, y'all.